Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the EAL Radio Show and our 45th consecutive live broadcast. We bring you news, interviews, radio skits, and memories of the airline that we all love so dearly. We broadcast from our studios here in beautiful Ponte Vedra, Florida, just 15 miles south of Jacksonville, Florida, and about the same distance to St. Augustine, Florida. I'm Margaret Bars. Our hosts for tonight's show are Bud Hescock, Neil Holland, and me, Margaret Bars, in Ponte Vedra, Florida, Jan Butch K.E. from Delray Beach, Florida, and Jim Hart from West Palm Beach, Florida. Now, we hope you caught our last show, episode 44, which was a hilarious flight resulting in a seven-hour entrapment of 260 Airbus passengers on the tarmac with an unusual celebrity ending. We hope you'll go to the homepage of our website and click on the archive version, episode 44. That website is www.ealradioshow.com. And on the homepage, look for the radio icon and simply click on episode 44. Now, you may call us tonight at either of our two phone numbers, area code 213-816-1611, or toll-free, area code 877-572-1861. Now, you may also send us a message on the chat feature of the webpage that you're currently logged into. Either way, we want to hear from you. And we always try to bring you stories from Eastern's past, which we call the Eastern Files, from those who participated in its history. Now, our lines are open during the program we have for you tonight, which, by the way, was suggested by a member who sent in an actual prank that was played on two flight attendants who were working the ghost ship L-1011. Many reports have been cited in both movie and book form. Now, if you've experienced an incident, we'd like to hear from you right after this short skit, which involved two Eastern crew members of Flight 45. We hope you enjoy it.
Jim Hart's our narrator. Go ahead.
Yes, I am. I'm listening to some introductory music of suspense.
Okay, well, just go ahead and start our program tonight, Jim.
All right. Tonight, Eastern Flight 45's flight crew is Captain Bud, First Officer Steve, and Second Officer Neil. Flight 45's flight crew arrives on board the L-1011 for their trip originating in Atlanta with final destination and layover in New York. The cabin members are Senior Flight Attendant Luann Wiggins, Jan Boskai, Thelma, Louise, Carol, Andy, and Bill.
Hey, Luann. Good to see you again. Great you're on my mother-in-law trip with us tonight.
There you go, Captain Bud, pulling my leg again. Why on earth would you announce this as your mother-in-law trip? I hope your wife is with you, with her.
No, Luann. This is my first flight as a captain on an L-1011. I have a check airman with me. In the first 25 hours, he has to fly with me, and then he can release me for solo. It's been a long time in school, so it really feels good to be sitting in this captain's seat. Of course, I've got Steve and Neil with me, so that's going to help. And we just simply refer to this as having your mother-in-law along with you, check airman. Mother-in-law, check airman, get it?
Oh, now I get it. You really don't like either one, do you?
Something like that. Do you have any good team in the back? How's your cabin crew?
Well, about 80% of them will be working with me. I've got two that are just plain goof-offs, and they've been so for the entire month. Hey, would you allow me to see if I can get them to join the rest of us and help out?
Sure, knowing you, what do you have in mind? I don't want to get my mother-in-law upset with me on my first trip as an L-1011 captain.
No, this will not involve any of you up front, and it'll take place before your quote-unquote mother-in-law arrives. I'll just need to borrow the second officer's cap and jacket for a short time. Now, here's my plan.
The cabin crew is going through their assignments for the flight by Senior Flight Attendant Luann, and Atlanta Maintenance comes aboard to check a few maintenance write-ups.
Hi, Captain. Just checking out the galley's elevators. Seems like most all of our maintenance items on this airplane, 318, have to do with the galleys. I guess it just seems that way on account of talk going around about seeing ghosts on this aircraft more than the others. Word is that most of the serviceable parts on aircraft 310 wound up on this airplane.
Yeah, so I've heard. I originally went through ground school and the flight simulator training on the 1011. Lots of stories are circulating in Miami about the ghost ship aircraft 318. And look which one I get on my first flight as a captain.
Yeah. And back in the cabin, Luann is giving her briefing.
Jan, I want you to work the first class section of the cabin with me for our 3-day trip. Now, I'll take the L1 seat. You take the R1 seat. Thelma and Louise, you'll take L2 and R2 seats and work the upper and lower galley. Carol, Andy, and Bill, you'll work the aft section of the cabin. Excuse me, Louise, and I do not like to work in the galley, so please put us in either the first class or in the aft section. There's simply too much work in the galley, and neither of us like to go down into that lower galley, especially in this airplane. You do know this is aircraft 318, don't you? Oh, horse feathers, Thelma, you'll work where I assign you, or I'll call crew schedule for your replacement. This aircraft is flown and serviced by real people. I suggest you go up front, meet the real live pilots who will fly you all to New York, not some ghost crew conjured up by the weak of mind. Okay, we'll go up and talk to the pilots and get their feeling. Let's go, Louise.
While Thelma and Louise go to the flight deck, Luann tells the other flight attendants the plan she has to get some revenge for the lack of help from Thelma and Louise for the whole month. Since this was the last trip of the month, and the two had been scarce in their help the entire month, and they always seemed to disappear whenever there was work to be done, this was a good time for payback. This was the ghost ship, after all, and the plan came easy to Luann and the rest of the cabin crew. In the lower galley of the L-1011, there was a small window in the panel between the galley and a trap door near the floor access to the aft apartment. From the galley, there was a switch to turn on the light in the aft cargo compartment so that the crew could visually check the compartment. Luann told the others of her plan.
Jan, this is going to be a knee slapper. We'll borrow the flight engineer's uniform jacket and hat. I've already told the captain and the second officer my plan, and he's hung that jacket in the forward coat closet along with his cap. Now, you go down to the galley before we board any of the passengers, and you put on that jacket and that hat. You turn that light on in that aft cargo compartment, and you use that trap door to get into the compartment behind the galley. Now, make sure you put on a nylon stocking over your head before putting on the hat, because I'm assuming you got an extra pair of pantyhose, Jan.
Sounds like a game. I'm game for this, and I hope that it will make them both change their pantyhose when they see what's down there. Luann, you'll have to divert their attention for a few minutes while I get the uniform and go down the elevator to the galley.
Oh, don't worry about that. I'll make sure they stay in the cockpit until we get it set up. Now, I'll go up there and ask that second officer and tell him a little more about this aircraft. Now, you guys make sure you keep Thelma and Louise busy until we're ready. Okay? Let's go.
The stage is now set for Thelma and Louise to meet the ghost.
Thelma and Louise, I want you guys to go down to the lower galley and you make sure all is set up before our boarding. Also, make sure catering has serviced the galley and we have the correct number of meals. All right, if we must, but, you know, if it's not all right, we're out of there.
Thelma and Louise arrive in the lower galley via the elevators.
Louise, check the ovens and I'll check the rest of the galley area. Hey, did you hear that? What's that noise? It sounds like tapping. Did you hear it too, Louise? Hey, Louise, get out of the elevator. Come back here. Let's finish our check. Don't you leave me here alone.
Thelma arrives on the upper level shortly after Louise.
Did Louise tell you about all the noise we heard down there? Something or someone was trying to get our attention. Oh, for heaven's sake, Thelma, there's no one down there. Now you go back down and you finish your work. You've been bone idle all month anyway. Every time I work with you two, you try to avoid any work assigned to you. Now, I want you back down there to finish the lower galley check. And I do mean now, Thelma.
Meanwhile, Jan in the second officer's cap, jacket, and stocking over her head, hearing the elevator activation and thinking that they both had ascended back to the upper level and began crawling out of the trap door of the aft cargo compartment. As luck would have it, the timing was perfect. As Thelma and Louise stepped out of their elevators into the lower galley, seeing the faceless pilot with cap and stock and jacket emerge out of the aircraft's cargo compartment's galley access door, they didn't know was there.
Oh, isn't that just precious? I think they have now been formally introduced to the ghost. You guys get back to your stations. You act like you heard nothing. And let's just do our best to keep a straight face.
Thelma and Louise verbally try to expedite their departure in the elevators, but have trouble with the elevator buttons and screaming at the top of their voices, all the while frantically pushing on the buttons and trying to push two buttons at the same time. Because of the safety features, thank goodness their arms were not severed from the open door lifts on their upward travel to the main cabin level. The screaming grew louder as they frantically tried to make the elevators work. Upon arriving on the main level, they could find no one in the immediate area and took off in search of senior flight attendant to tell her of the apparition they had just seen. Meanwhile, the ghost of Repo came up the elevator and proceeded back to the aft laboratory to freshen up and to get out of the uniform and the stocking.
Luanna, there's someone in the lower galley. I swear we saw a faceless pilot down there. Wait a minute. Are you guys just having a good time playing a trick on us? That's not even funny. One of you is playing the ghost, right? Who's missing? Well, I don't know what you're talking about, but you take a head count if you must. But I believe you'll find all of us here, and we are accounted for. Then it must be one of the pilots who pulled this not-so-funny joke. Come on, Louise, quick. Let's go to the front, to the flight deck. Let's see who's missing.
Upon entering the flight deck, Thelma and Louise find all three, plus the check airmen, in their seats with very straight faces, going over the checklist items, responding to the last item on the list, the second officer turns to Louise and asks,
"Hey, Louise, Thelma, got a problem in the back?
Have you guys been up here for the last 10 minutes or so?"
"Sure have. Oh, by the way, let me know if you have any problems with the elevators. Maintenance was up here a little while ago and said they had cleared some mechanical issues with the elevators. Do you mind checking them out for us?"
"You are out of your mind if you think I'm going back into that hellhole again.
All right, Captain. I'll go back and check it out. It seems that these two here look like they've just seen a ghost.
Thelma and Louise were really upset because they could not come up with any other explanation. They asked the senior flight attendant if they should report the incident to the company.
You two surely must have imagined the entire incident. And all I can tell you is that if you do report this to the company, you'll probably be in the company shrink's office the next day. I think that would look bad on your personnel file, but you do what you think's in your best interest. I'll get Andy and Bill to take R1 and R2, and you two work in the back. It really looks like the lower galley has become your own personal twilight zone.
Tonight's cast was narrated by Jim Hart. The captain was Bud Hescock, second officer Neil Holland. Luann, Margaret Bars. Jan was played by Jan Butskai. Thelma, Margaret Bars, and maintenance, Neil Holland. We hope you enjoyed our little skit. We do have some information that we can talk about now about the aircraft and the two airplanes pretty much involved in most of the sightings. But aircraft 310, it's an L-1011 with a manufacturer's serial number of 1011. And it was delivered to Eastern August 18th in 1972. And it was only 4 months old, a little over 4 months old, when it crashed into the Florida Everglades December 29th, 1972. Eastern put the L-1011 branded as the Whisperliner into service just 8 months earlier on the inaugural run from Miami to New York by Atlanta, April 26, 1972, with aircraft number 302. Eastern would order 50 of these three-engine-powered Rolls-Royce Lockheed L-1011 TriStars, which was Lockheed's designation of the 316-seat aircraft. Aircraft 310, Eastern Flight 401, departed New York December 29, 1972, bound for Miami, with 163 passengers and a crew of 10 flight attendants, 3 flight crew members, and 1 jump seat rider on board. The aircraft arrived in the Miami area with a clearance to land on runway 9 right at 11:33 p.m., and the crew acknowledging it had a problem with the nose wheel indication of not being down and locked at 11:34 p.m. The captain instructs the first officer to turn the autopilot on. Captain Bob Loft, an Eastern pilot for 21 years, requested to circle until the problem could be taken care of and a reversal of course to a heading of 270 degrees was executed. One of the pilots accidentally caused the autopilot to disengage and the aircraft starts a very slow descent. At 11:41, the captain feels the light is the problem and tells the tower he is ready to land. About the same time, they noticed the altitude was not what they expected with the autopilot on, and at 11:42, the left wing hits the ground and Flight 401 crashes into the Everglades.
The cause of the crash was found to be a couple of minor design faults in the controls, and Lockheed rapidly corrected them. Some of the undamaged parts of the aircraft were subsequently recycled onto other planes. Thus began the mysterious incidents that would be reported by crew members as well as passengers, even an Eastern vice president. The following is from the research done by John G. Fuller into what has come to be known as the ghost of Flight 401. As the reports would have it, Captain Loft and Second Officer Repo had devoted their afterlives to watching over the passengers and crew of these Lockheed passenger planes. Many of the testimonies are extremely persuasive. Many come from people in highly responsible positions, such as pilots, flight officers, and even a vice president of Eastern Airlines, who allegedly spoke with the captain he assumed was in charge of the flight before recognizing him as late Captain Loft. On the other sightings are convincing because they have multiple witnesses, a flight captain, and two flight attendants claimed they had seen and spoken to Captain Loft before takeoff and watched him vanish, an experience that left them so shaken they canceled the flight.
One female passenger made a concerned inquiry to a flight attendant regarding the quiet, unresponsive man in Eastern Airlines uniform sitting in the seat next to her, who subsequently disappeared in full view of both of them and several other passengers, leaving the woman hysterical. When later shown a sheet of photos depicting Eastern flight engineers, she identified Repo as the officer she had seen. Another incident occurred when one of the L-1011's passenger planes that had been fitted with salvaged parts was due for takeoff. The flight engineer was midway through carrying out the routine pre-flight inspection when Don Repo appeared to him and said, "You don't need to worry about the pre-flight. I've already done it."
Repo and Loft are apparently not content merely to be present on these airplanes. Often, their style is far more hands-on, particularly in Repo's case. Aside from his appearance to a pre-flight engineer, who he appeared to have been assisting, there is testimony from a flight attendant who observed a man in a flight engineer's uniform, whom she later recognized as Repo, fixing a galley oven. The instance of the plane's own flight engineer that he had not fixed the oven and that there had not been another engineer on board would seem to lend weight to her claim. Repo was also seen in the compartment below the cockpit by a flight engineer who had accessed it in order to investigate a knocking he heard coming from there.
On another occasion, Faye Merriweather, a flight attendant, saw Second Officer Repo's face looking out at her from an oven in the galley of TriStar 318. Understandably alarmed, she fetched two colleagues, one of whom was the flight engineer who had been a friend of Second Officer Repo, and recognized him instantly. Now, all three heard Second Officer Repo warn them to watch out for fire on this airplane. The plane later encountered serious engine trouble, and the last leg of its flight was canceled. It's interesting to note that the galley of the TriStar 318 had been salvaged from the wreckage of Flight 401. The sightings were all reported to the Flight Safety Foundation, which is an independent authority, and they commented, "The reports were given by experienced and trustworthy pilots and crew. We do consider them significant." The appearance of the deceased flight attendant, Second Officer Repo, was confirmed by the flight engineer. Later, records of the Federal Aviation Agency recorded the fire which broke out on that very same aircraft.
One of the vice presidents of Eastern Airlines boarded a Miami-bound TriStar at JFK Airport and spoke to a uniformed captain sitting in first class. Suddenly, he recognized the captain was Bob Loft, at which point the apparition vanished. Another incident occurred when Don Repo appeared to a captain and told him, "There will never be another crash. We will not let it happen." A female passenger found herself sitting next to an Eastern flight officer who looked pale and ill but would not speak. She called a stewardess, but before the eyes of several people, the man just disappeared. The woman was later shown photographs of Eastern Airlines engineers, and she identified the man as Don Repo. Unfortunately, further research into the well-witnessed paranormal incidents was severely hampered by the airline company, which steadfastly refused to cooperate with the ghost investigators. That's some interesting facts written in the book, The Ghost of Flight 401. We've got some calls. We hope that will be with us this evening. Carol Lepard. Carol, are you with us tonight?
Yes, I am. I'm on the phone.
Okay. Carol was so kind to send us a email, and we tried to develop a skit out of it. I hope we didn't ruin it too badly, Carol.
I'm sure you didn't.
And I'm sorry that I had to give it that little Kentucky twang, but, you know, that's Luann, so.
You must have been fun on layovers with a sense of humor like that.
Well, sometimes you just have to see the light side of things.
Carol, did you personally work in the lower galley?
Yes, quite often.
And you were describing the galley to me. I flew the airplane. I have almost 3,000 hours in that airplane, or in the 1011. Of course, many hours was put in aircraft 318. And as a matter of fact, I had a little incident with the mayor, former mayor of Atlanta, Mayor Ivan Allen. He was a mayor before Andrew Young became mayor in Atlanta. And I think I mentioned that I was walking in the back, and I'd been told by maintenance that it was aircraft 318, the ghost airplane, and I saw this gentleman, very distinguished gentleman, reading a book. And I looked, and I thought I'd recognized him, but I asked him, I said, sir, I said, what are you reading? And he said, well, my daughter gave me this book for Christmas, and I thought I would read it on my trip up to New York. And I said, well, you know, the airplane that the book is based on is the airplane that you're flying, 318. So it was the ghost airplane. Of course, he closed the book and said he would finish to start reading it when he got to New York. But lots of stories on that airplane. And was it a first choice by a lot of flight attendants that wanted to work in the galley, Carol?
Really, with flight attendants, scheduling is everything. So it not necessarily that airplane or that particular working position, but flight attendants have various reasons for bidding the schedule that they do. Either they are young parents and want to be home with their children every night, or they may have a boyfriend or a girlfriend in a distant city and they choose to fly that route, or, you know, various things, or they may have a best friend that they like to fly with, and they will choose to fly a particular route together that they know they can hold by their seniority. So it really just varies. In my experience, because I flew the 1011 quite a lot, even though the stories were there about the ghosts on that particular airplane, I don't think that any flight attendant particularly avoided that airplane or particularly chose to fly that airplane. A few of the flight attendants I worked with when we were on that particular aircraft were a little uneasy about working in the galley because it's on a lower level. It's below the cabin level. And there were a number of incidences reported where the ghosts that apparently inhabited that airplane were seen on the lower level. So there were a few flight attendants who were a little uncomfortable being down below decks, but most of them not.
Did they have a title for the people that worked in the galley?
Just the galley flight attendant. Because that person that worked in the lower, what we call the lower lobe galley, did all the food preparation, cooked the meals, stacked the carts, sent them up, because there were two, what most people would call a dumbwaiter or an elevator that sent the all the carts from first class all the way to the coach. All the carts came from that lower galley.
That's great.
So that was just the galley position.
Now, Carol, you, in your email to me about this incident that we did the skit, you called them frickin' frack.
Well, I have to explain a little bit. An airplane is a very intense work environment for people that aren't so familiar with flying. And whether you're on a very small airplane or a very big airplane like the Lockheed 1011, where we had 10 flight attendants, you really have to work very closely with all your other flight attendants. And when someone isn't carrying their share of the load, it becomes very apparent rather quickly. And this story that I related to you, we have a monthly schedule where most people that work 9 to 5 have a 5-day-a-week schedule. But in the airline, we have a monthly schedule, and the flight attendants all work together for a whole month. And these two people were very, these two ladies were very close friends, and they bid to work together, but they were really quite lazy and very unreliable, and the other flight attendants became somewhat resentful of them, and they were always goofing off, and they were never carrying their load, and so that it became a joke over the month of flying with them that the other flight attendants were calling them Frick and Frack, because they just, whenever work was to be done, they were hard to find, and so that's how they came by the name.
Okay. Did you get a chance to fly with them again afterwards?
Yes, off and on. Yeah, over the years, yes.
Yeah. Did you like that airplane, or did you have a preference, Carol?
I liked the airplane very much. Yes, I enjoyed working on it. It was a great airplane.
Yeah, besides the 757, I think that was my favorite airplane as a pilot to fly. It was a great airplane.
Yeah.
We do have Leslie Davidson on the line, and would you open the microphone for Leslie? Leslie, it's so nice having you with us. Can you hear me okay? Leslie from area code 770. Maybe that's not Leslie. Area code 770?
Yeah, Sonny Smithwick Zone.
Oh, hey, Sonny, how are you?
Just fine, just listening. Good show.
Okay, very good, very good. We do have some other call-ins that we are trying to get in touch with. We do have Leslie Davidson. We'll make a call to him in just a few minutes. And Leslie is doing with the company that he's with, and I think he wants to ask a special request from our listeners. He is with the William Shatner TV production studios up in Canada, and they're doing a show on the ghost of the 1011. And so have you got Leslie on? Leslie?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes,
area code 770.
Yes.
Okay, well, who's speaking?
This is Leslie.
Oh, this is Leslie. Okay. Now, you, I've got the wrong Leslie, I guess.
Hi.
Leslie, Leslie Davidson?
No, this is Leslie Koska.
Oh, okay. Leslie, all right, you were the second caller. I just didn't have my telephone numbers lined up here. My engineer is doing the best to keep me out of trouble here. But, Leslie, you have a very, very interesting story also. You were in Pittsburgh, I believe, your story.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and can you tell us about that?
I can. Am I on the air right now? I'm sorry. I just muted my computer.
Yes, you are on the air.
Okay.
You're coming in loud and clear, Leslie. So if you can relate the story that you emailed to us, I think it's quite interesting.
Okay. Thank you very much. I had just started with Eastern Airlines up in Pittsburgh in the mid-70s, and I did not know anything about the history of 401 crashing. I did not know anything about the history of the parts being used on the other aircrafts at all. I was working the afternoon shift and was asked to stay overtime into the midnight shift, and my assignment for that night was to stay on board a 1011 and vacuum it, being the only person on the aircraft. Everybody else had already finished with their assignment and had moved on to whatever they were going to clean next. You know, a 1011 has two aisles, so you basically have to vacuum from the back of the aircraft to the front of the aircraft, and you're actually moving through the plane twice. And because it was during the winter, the jetway had been pulled, so I knew that I was going to be the only person on that aircraft. Well, the sensations that I felt when I was on that aircraft were somewhat different than what I had ever experienced from before. And this is not the first time that I was ever on an aircraft by myself. It's certainly not the only time that I had been left on an aircraft without an access to the jetway or to the stairs to get back on the tarmac or anything. This, you know, this was normal for people that worked into the midnight shift and you're cleaning. if they had to pull the jetway for whatever reason, you're stuck on the plane, and it's just something that you get accustomed to. Anyway, as I'm vacuuming in the aircraft, I know that I'm the only person up there. I'm seeing movements off to the side, and I turn, and, of course, there's nothing there. But I just keep vacuuming and move up a little bit further in the cabin, and I see another movement, and I turn again, and, of course, there's nothing there. And as you're standing and you're vacuuming, you might see, say, for instance, a vehicle that's moving outside, and you'd catch a reflection in the window or whatever. This is not the type of movement that I'm talking about. It would be as if there was a person standing there or something was opening, such as the overhead bin, or if something was falling next to you and you go to grab it very quickly and pick it up. But there was never anything there. Well, I finished one side of the aircraft. I walked around just to see if there was somebody else in the plane with me, and obviously there was not. Pulled my equipment back to the rear of the aircraft and finished the other side as quickly as I could. And I got on the radio and I called my crew to let them know that I needed to have the jetway pulled back up after they finished cleaning the ice and snow and everything else off of it. And they let me out of the aircraft, and I went downstairs and they started to quiz me. How did you feel? Did you see anything? Did you hear anything while you were up there? And that's when I found out that this was 318, the infamous plane that seemed to have all of the spare parts from the crash of 401. And it just kind of threw me off kilter. That was the first time I had ever heard of anything. Now, I stayed in Pittsburgh for about 2 years, and then I transferred down into Atlanta. And I had been on 318 after that many, many times. It was just an aircraft after that. I had never, from that point on, gotten another sensation just like that first time. I don't know if it's because I knew about it after that and I was looking for something and I just never felt it. But definitely that first night on that aircraft, I've never experienced that same type of feeling again.
Did you ever hear any of the other guys talk about that airplane and having experienced anything similar to what you had experienced?
Well, I'm not quite sure if they stuck me up there that night on that particular assignment because they weren't comfortable with being up there themselves, or if it was just, hey, she's the one that's left over and working overtime and let us just get on with our work and it was convenient for me to be up there or whatever. But it was somewhat of a joke to them, I think, to let me go up there not knowing, and somewhat of a comical joke to them to say, hey, how did you feel when you got off? And, of course, I wasn't going to say, when they were telling me the stories about things, I wasn't going to say, oh, geez, I got the spooks while I was up there or whatever. I just thought, you know, it's kind of weird being up there on an aircraft by yourself, but I let it go. But it seemed unusual to me that they were even saying anything to me because, again, too, I had stayed overtime prior to that. I had been the only person on the aircraft prior to that, working with this same crew. This was not an unusual situation. So it was very strange for them to even be asking me that particular night.
Did you hear sounds or just sense movement?
Could not have heard sounds because of the vacuum cleaner,
but I
sensed a presence.
Mm-hmm.
It's an unusual feeling. It's very, very hard to describe, but if you've ever caught something out of the corner of your eye and you've turned to see if something was there and something isn't there and it just kind of puzzles you for a moment. It was like that the entire time that I was on that plane.
I see.
I have experienced that. Whoa.
Well, we do have Malcolm Davidson with us, and Malcolm is with the William Shatner TV production studios. Malcolm, are you with us? Malcolm? I think he has to press number one in order to come online. Malcolm, if you can hear us talking, if you press number one on your phone, you might be able to open up the connection and we can chat with you. I don't think it's going to work. Well, maybe we can talk with him in just a little while. Malcolm is with the William Shatner TV production studios, and they produce a program that they broadcast, or it's a scene on the History Channel, and I believe the Discovery Channel and National Geographic, and they're doing a story on those that have had experiences with aircraft 318 or any of the L-1011s, that there have been reports of apparitions or whatever. And so we were hoping to get Malcolm with us. Still not connected. We'll try to redial Malcolm, and perhaps we can bring you online. It would be nice to hear what you guys are doing up there in Canada. And we have put out a special request through the website.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello,
this can
is Carol.
You?
This is the flight attendant you were talking to earlier. I just wanted to add something that occurred to me. And the young lady that was just speaking. The thing that makes this particular airplane, 318, so interesting, and maybe some of your listeners aren't as aware of how extensive the travels are for a particular aircraft. It's not like that one particular airplane goes back and forth to Miami, New York, or Miami, Los Angeles all the time. That airplane will travel extensively all over the country and landing in many different airports and overnighting in many airports. And her experiences obviously have occurred in many places because this particular airplane developed a reputation. And most airline people are very pragmatic and not easily swayed in any particular direction. But so many of us that worked for Eastern and worked with this particular airplane constantly were hearing stories that were very similar to hers. And I think this is what brought the story of Flight 401 in the book and its reputation to light, because there were just so many people talking about situations that they encountered on the airplane. And none of them really threatening. I never heard of anyone feeling threatened or frightened by anything they saw or felt or heard.
I would have to agree with that. It was not a threatening feeling. It was a strain.
Right. Yeah. But collectively, and because so many of us talk to each other, you know, I may have talked to another flight attendant or some ground personnel in another station that had some comment about what was going on this particular airplane, and that's what makes it so interesting.
And part of my assignment, you know, a 1011 having the galley downstairs also, part of my assignment normally would have been to check the floors in the galley. But on that particular night, for that particular shift, the caterers had not taken the carts out of the galley. So that would not have been done until later on the midnight shift or closer to the early morning shift. So it was not my responsibility to go down there and check that. Being the way that it was that evening, the way that I felt, the atmosphere on that aircraft, I've always wondered, after I found out about the aircraft, heard the story, and I was actually off of the airplane, I keep wondering if I would have seen anything if I was down in the galley that night.
Who knows?
let me interrupt for a second here. At area code 416, is that you, Malcolm, in order to converse with us? You push one on your phone, and it should make it work.
Malcolm, if you're listening to us, you can call us on our toll-free.
You can call us on our toll-free number at 877-572-1861. So if you'd like to call in and talk about your experiences on that airplane or on any of the 1011s, call us either at area code 213-816-1611. Are toll-free 877-572-1861. We would like to have you give us a call.
We've got someone on there at area code 317. 317, glad to have you with us this evening. Do you have anything you'd like to add to the conversation?
Well, I think everyone's listening to us tonight.
Well, I think he needs to press 1.
Yeah. We're trying to put another call.
It's about as hard as me trying to get a date.
I know it. I wonder if we got spare parts we're using here on this. We have had several people that have responded to our request for contact with the Shatner Group, and we put that up with them. Hopefully they'll be calling folks like yourself, Leslie, if you don't mind.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, who is speaking?
Greg? Yeah, this is Greg Grunston. I'm a colleague of Malcolm Davidson's.
Okay, we're unable to get through to Malcolm, but we're glad to have you with us. And now you are with the production studio up in Canada, correct?
Yeah, that's right. We're producing a show called William Shatner's Weirder Wife.
And Weirder What? What? That's the name of the show, and it's aired on what? The History Channel.
And it's on History Channel in Canada, and probably on other broadcasters as well. And we'd like to do, well, we're doing a story on the ghost of Flight 401.
We've got a little time delay, and we're hearing echoes in the background, Greg. But when will that show air?
I can hear that. Well, yeah. That show will air next fall, so the fall of 2012.
And you are looking for folks that have been on that aircraft. Can you put out your special request, Greg?
Yes, indeed. We're looking for people who would have been on aircraft number 318, and would have had, might have seen the ghost or had some kind of experience with the ghost of Flight 401. And if they have, we'd love to talk to them. If they can get in touch with us by email. And our email address is M Davidson, so that's M Davidson at cineflix.com. That's spelled cineflix.com.
Okay, very good, Greg. We're getting a very bad sound quality feedback here, so we're going to cut this off. But we've got the email address, and we thank you very much for calling in this evening. And we hope we can get some folks that will participate, and you can talk with and get the information and the people that you're looking for. Thanks so much for being with us, Greg.
Before you go, Greg, 1 second. This is specifically just solely for 401. It's not for any other experiences on aircraft that they've had a similar experience.
No, this is solely for Flight 401.
Okay, sir.
Again, well, thanks so much.
Well, thank you so much, and have a good evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Wow, boy, we have really had some radio problems tonight, haven't we?
Oh, we need Debbie Starfire, I tell you.
Leslie, are you still with us, and Carol?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, very good. Well, I guess you heard all the feedback there, really poor sound, but they are looking for folks to talk about that airplane, and it was such an interest about that airplane that I think there were 2 movies made.
Right.
And, of course, 1 book or 2 books that were written about the airplane.
I have to chuckle. I flew a 1011, an XTWA 1011 for a while. 400 seats, all coach.
Wow.
It was like it's the next best thing to being in an auditorium.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Well, it was a great airplane. It really was. And I was kind of saddened when Lockheed decided to get out of the passenger aircraft manufacturing.
And a good airplane to fly.
Yeah, it was really a great airplane. Now, Delta Airlines took our fleet, I believe. most of our fleet. And aircraft 318, someone told me it was sold to Cathay Pacific.
Don't make that. I don't know.
I'm not certain where it wound up.
When I flew it, I wasn't with an airline. I was with a non-sked tour company, and we would take it all over the place. But, but it was a TWA-1, the little big one, and that was quite an experience. Buttons were in different positions, and took some getting used to.
Yeah. I remember they had the long-range airplane where they had the...
Oh, the 500 series?
Yeah, the 500 series. Eastern was the first airline to put the 1011 into service.
It was a good airplane. It had the range, boy.
It sure would go.
Yeah, it really would. Let's see. We have some more callers. I wonder if we can open up the line to area code 317. Let's try it again. Area 317.
Have any good stories to tell us?
Well, we can't open it up there. Area 317?
Just isn't our night.
And Sonny? Sonny is with us, too.
Yes, I'm here listening, just listening to your show.
Okay. Did you fly the 1011 or work on the 1011 or were a passenger on the 1011?
No, I was in dispatch and operations control, and Bill Jones and I were the two that went out there that night to 401.
That's right. You were actually there the night of the crash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that experience, Sonny?
It started out that of course, between Christmas and New Year's. And I got a friend of mine, Bill Jones, called and wanted to know if he could go out and have a drink after work. And I got off about 10 o'clock. And we went up to a little place on the Palmetto Expressway up there and had a few Christmas drinks. And somebody had come in and said that, there was a crash out in the Everglades out there. So, after a while, we decided that we were going to go find the crash out in the Everglades, which... At that point, we sort of thought it was a joke, ever even getting out there. But it was just amazing when you pretend like you're supposed to be somewhere, how everybody just sort of backs away. And we went through numerous roadblocks out there with Highway Patrol and FBI and everybody else. And we finally got out, getting a lot of feedback. Anyway, we finally got out there, and we went to the NTSB, and there was the Red Cross was there. And we just told them we was from Eastern, and we were there if they needed any help from us, not knowing what we were going to get into. And next thing I know, they come over, and they want to know if we would go into the crash site with them because they needed to turn the personal effects of everybody over to Eastern, to somebody that would be responsible for them. So anyway, long story short, the next thing I knew, Bill Jones and myself were out there in the middle of this thing, pretty much going through all the bags and tagging everybody. So it turned out to be one of those nights that you weren't planning on, and the next thing you know, you're in the middle of something bigger than you thought. So that was sort of our involvement in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I wish we could have gotten Malcolm with us, but we were able to talk to Greg. And any other thoughts? Let's see if we can get Jim Hart. Are you with us?
Yes, I am, and I had a question for Bud.
Go ahead, sir.
I wondered, you mentioned that the configuration of the L-1011 that you flew for, a charter outfit or something, was different from what you were used to. Why would they change?
It was a travel agency bought it. The company was called Five Star, and they took the TWA had a different model, a different size airplane than I think what Eastern had. It had the -1. I think you had the -10s, if I remember. And it was a bigger airplane, but they were doing the vacation packages to Cancun and to Puerto Vallarta and all those great places down there, and they wanted to get as many people on board as they could.
But would that change the configuration of the cockpit?
No, no, it wouldn't change the configuration of the cockpit. TWA had a procedure where most airliners, if you turn the switch on, you pushed it down. With TWA, you had to push the switch up. They redesigned the cockpit, the switches in the cockpit for TWA standards.
Understand, yeah. Are we still on?
We are.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
And I think the gauges, we had the rad gauges.
Yeah, we had the tape gauges.
Yeah, the
tapes, we call them tapes.
Yeah, they go up in the vertical.
Yeah.
If I may interject, don't you find it interesting that we're talking about the ghost and we're having all of these problems with our technical equipment, et cetera?
I never thought of that. I'll see you tomorrow.
Actually, I'm on my way out right now.
I'm out of here. Yeah,
does anyone have whistling on their phone?
Yeah,
I think it's your phone, Jim. Yeah.
Maybe.
What kind of phone are you using? A cell phone or are you using a home
phone? No, it's a portable home phone.
Oh, okay.
Landline.
Yeah. It might be because you're too close to your base that you took it out of the cradle there. Sometimes that happens when you take a mobile phone line. Yes. I was wondering maybe are you listening to a radio also?
Am I?
Yes, sir.
No.
Okay.
But I'm getting some feedback. I'm getting it's almost like an echo.
Yeah. Could be someone online has a radio turned up or something to that.
Well, as Luann would say, that's just mighty conspicuous to me.
Yeah, my friend. I'm going to take all this equipment back to Dollar Tree. Or Dollar Store.
It was guaranteed for a week. I don't know what the problem is.
we're getting close to our sign-off time. We do have a few announcements to make, so we're going to go into that. And I wanted to – whoops, there goes another whistle. And, yeah,
I rest
it's
okay.
Gone. We've got a great video that was sent to us by Bill Hirsch that is about the DC-7B flight flown by Captain Sully Sullenberger and his first officer, Jeff Skiles, who were the heroes of the Miracle on the Hudson. And the flight was a complete sellout at $1,000 per seat. It departed Opa-locka and went to Charlotte. That was the 18th, just a few days ago, for the dedication of the Hudson Airbus A310 that went into the Charlotte Aviation Museum, where Sully delivered a dedication speech, I guess. But if you want to see this video, we posted it on our website, and you can go to the EALradioshow.com and to the website's news page, or you can go over to the newsletter page and click on the URL address, and it should play for you. So that's the video of the DC-7 that was on the flight up to Charlotte, which I guess everyone had a great time, especially with the crew members as popular as Jeff and Sully.
They had an engine failure on the flight, didn't they?
I didn't hear that.
Yes, sir. Made the news, the successful landing.
My golly.
But, it was pretty interesting. They got the experience. It was on the – was it this weekend? It was on the news here in Jacksonville.
I didn't pick that up.
But then –
yeah.
Houston came through like a champ.
There you go. Wonder which engine, one or four?
He didn't say.
I hope it wasn't one.
He said it was a loss. He said he lost an engine. No.
Yeah.
I mean,
you know, I have a question.
Go ahead.
I wondered how the $1,000 passengers got back to Miami.
That's a good question. I'll have to ask Bill Hirsch about that. Perhaps he knows. But we certainly want to thank Bill for sending that great video. And it's there for your viewing, so if you want to tune in to the website and pick up that video, and some good text material, a story that goes along with the video, and great viewing. We've got some new club members that joined up with us, and Margaret, do you want to
call the names out?
Yes, I'd certainly be happy to do that. We have Barbara from
Tampa,
TO63,
Philadelphia,
Linda Trusnovic,
Southwest Florida,
John Clower,
New Smyrna Beach, Florida,
Sally Painter,
Palm Harbor, Florida,
Don Cross,
Juliet, Illinois,
Michelle Forrest McCure.
I hope I can do this one. Saint Agrite des Monts. I believe that's Quebec, Canada.
There you go. That's easier.
There you go.
And Tom Farina.
From Las Vegas.
Ronald Ferkel.
Orlando.
Pauline Sibley.
Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina.
Walt Walton.
Chesaning, Michigan. Yeah. Chesaning, Michigan.
Tony Vasco.
Fort Collins, Colorado.
Howard Baugh.
Florida, Virginia.
Scott Gibson.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Paul Stanley.
Chambersburg, Pennsylvania.
I think I mispronounced it. Paul Staley.
He's still from Chambersburg.
How about Chambersburg?
Chambersburg. Now I'm getting confused.
Sorry about that, Paul. You may need to call in and correct us.
There you go.
Ann.
Atlanta.
Judy Gallagher Benedict.
Savannah, Georgia.
And last but not least, Angie Smith.
From Atlanta. Welcome on board.
And folks, if you know some folks that remembered Eastern Airlines or have a family member that you want to tell them about our radio club, we'd be happy to have them join us and listen to our show. And, of course, there's some great stuff on the website. And speaking of great stuff on the website, Christmas is just around the corner. And we'd like to suggest that for that Eastern friend that you might want to give a gift to, that it would be a great gift if you would think of the 35 years of Repartee, which is the Retired Eastern Pilots Association's magazine. And we take many of our radio shows in the programming from that from those magazines, I should say, because for 35 years they printed about three issues every year, so there are many, many stories on that CD, and you'll find it very, very interesting. The cost is only $19.95, so we suggest that you order today, and just by contacting us on our contact at host@EALRadioshow, that's host@EALRadioshow.com, and we'll send it right out to you. It's for a good cause also. It helps keep us online and on the air. So your help is greatly appreciated. It's been a challenging year for us here at the radio station, but we turn challenges into successes. To you, our Eastern fam friends, you have shown great support for our efforts as our ship has grown. In the nearly 1 year we have been broadcasting to now a number that is 652 folks. You have given us your interest and support to help our radio broadcast and website stay alive and certain to move into 2012 with positive signs of future growth. And on behalf of the radio and website team, we thank you for your support this year. We're all grateful, and we hope that please that you will enjoy your Thanksgiving, and may it be filled with abundance and bright moments, and we all wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. You've got any comments, Margaret, or Bud, or Jan?
Well, I just wanted to say, if you don't mind, if I'll start out, I just want to give thanks for having the opportunity to be on the show. I'm probably the only one with no flight experience and have for many years been a white knuckle flyer, so I really do appreciate it. I've learned so much about it. I was even able to fly in a 1931 Stearman. Is that correct? Is that
you're right. That's exactly.
And it didn't pass out, so I think that was really good. But thank all of you out there in EAL Radio Land. I've certainly enjoyed all your stories. I think all of you are just fabulous people.
I agree with that. I want to be. I want to thank you very much for letting an outsider from United Airlines participate in your family. It's like being a long-lost relative that nobody wanted to talk about. But it's great. I've met some wonderful people. I've had great conversations here, and I'm proud to be part of the team.
Well, Eastern flew its aircraft in your friendly skies. How's that?
It was good.
And we hope to fly airplanes once again in the friendly skies, because we hope that the airline will take life again in 2012. Jim Hart, have you heard any information about the new Eastern Airlines and
yes,
when it might start up again?
Yes, Neil. In fact, just last Wednesday, we had the monthly board meeting of EARA, and Vito is he's on an advisory group, and he said things are looking better all the time. They have a very large amount of investors ready to go, and apparently they're doing something about gate space and things like that. I understand that that we may, of course, farm out our maintenance at the beginning, but that's it, and it's very positive from Vito.
Very good, yeah. I'm sure they're really hoping that the economy will improve so that they can get the airplane, the airline back up in the air. And we want to say thank you very much, Jan, for you being with us as one of our hosts and having you with us.
Thank you for having me. And I did want to say thank you as far as Thanksgiving. I certainly give thanks because I was scheduled to be on 401 out of Kennedy that evening, and I had a change of plans. I was up in the Hartford area and went out to dinner with friends of mine, and as a result, left from Bradley Field the next morning. So I have particular reason to thank God.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Incredible.
Yeah. Leslie and Carol, thank you very much for being with us this evening. We certainly appreciate it. And I'll be emailing you some information about the Shatner Group, and hopefully you'll be able to make contact with them. Have a great Thanksgiving.
You also. Thank you.
And, folks, that's our show for tonight, and we hope you'll join us next Monday, the same time, same station, when we bring you our 46th live broadcast of the EAL radio show. So from all of your hosts and the Eastern family, where all the women are unequaled, all the men are good-looking, and all the children and grandchildren are above average, we'll say
good night and happy Thanksgiving, Neil, Steve, Bud, Jim, and Jan.
Good night, Margaret, Steve, Neil, Jim, Jan, and I have to say good night to a relative, Anna.
Anna. All of us, Jan.
Good night, Margaret, Steve, Bud, Neil, and Jim.
Good night, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. Try to get some lobster in there if you can. Good night. Good night, Margaret, Bud, Steve, Jan, and Neil.
And good night, Jim, Margaret, Bud, Steve, Jan, and Luann, wherever you are.
Well, good night, y'all, and make sure you fly right side up. We'll see you next week. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Good night, all.
Good night, family.